Right, this is Daniel P. Carter from Radio 1 and Swim Podcast. You're listening to Skip to the End.
Skip to the End.
Welcome to episode 48 of the Skip to the End podcast. And our introduction there was provided by Daniel P. Carter of the Radio 1 Rock Show and of bands such as Crocodile and A. And we got to meet him at the Download Festival, which we're going to be talking about a little bit later on. But first of all, let's introduce ourselves. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
So Mark and I got to go to the Download Festival. Towards the back end of the show, we're going to talk about what we got up to there, who we saw and who we got to speak to. But we're going to concentrate on today's episode, first of all. It's a bit of an animation special, this one. We've got a great topic and a great film to review. The topic was mine, and it is the top three voice performances in animation. And keeping with that, Adam, what's the film we're reviewing this week?
We're going to be looking at The Secret Life of Pets.
We are indeed, which features some good vocal performances within that one. Maybe ones that have jumped to the top of your list. We shall soon find out.
Isn't this a first for us, that our first main review that is an animation apart from Animalese, which is kind of different?
Yeah, it's the first sort of children's proper animation that we've reviewed. Yeah,
48 episodes until we've done that.
Yeah, it's taken a while.
I don't really think the target audience for our podcast is necessarily kids, given the language we had at the start.
It is for ages 4 and up, this show. Did you not know that?
No.
We're now going to the new market. We've done Turtles, we've now done this, you know, we're going in a new way.
Okay, new direction, I like it.
Not the band. Mark, what year are we skipping back in time to?
1982, indeed. Which is a phenomenal year.
It is. And Adam, what's our rewatch?
We're going to be rewatching The Avengers.
We are indeed. But which one though, Adam?
Oh, the 1998 version starring Uma Thurman, Ralph Fiennes and Sean Connery.
Yeah, what a delight that was.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. A little more on that later.
Yeah. And we're also going to be playing the second round of our game show, Lost the Plot, and giving away a cool prize, all sorts of stuff. Before we move on to the first part of the show, though, last week, on the last episode, Mark had what can only be described as a breakdown with regards to the phrase, selling like hotcakes.
Yes.
You were up in arms about this phrase because you wanted to know where it came from, and you were adamant that you had never bought a hotcake.
No.
No? Have you bought a hotcake in the intervening weeks, maybe?
Yep.
No, you haven't.
Never.
But I went and did some digging on this.
Oh. See, I tried to, but I couldn't get any. They're all sold out.
Oh.
They go too quickly, Adam. This is the problem, you see. I've done a bit of digging on this and I've found out where the phrase comes from. Hotcakes is an archaic term for pancakes.
Oh.
So that's what it means. That's what it means. It doesn't mean like a hot cross bun or anything. It means a pancake.
Well, that's even worse because they're only for sale for 1 week in February once a year.
No, not true.
No. That's just a designated day in which people have pancakes. You can have pancakes anytime you want.
But I never bother and no one I know is like, oh, do you want to come around for some food? Like, yeah, what's on the menu? Oh, we're going to have some pancakes with sugar and lemon in April.
I love the idea that the International House of Pancakes only opens the worst business model of all time.
One day, yeah. I hope telling you this, Mark, was going to put your mind at rest, but it's made you worse, if anything.
Yeah.
You're more upset.
And I want people to start saying, oh, it sells like pancakes. That's what I want people to start
right,
saying.
That's a movement going now. Hashtag pancakes on all the tweets to us, please, guys. Good Lord. Let's get started. Topic this week then is top three vocal performances in animation, which is a bit of a fun one because I think people who do vocal performances in animation get overlooked. Animation in general gets overlooked, especially by awards bodies and so on, but the vocal work that goes into them is often and always, in fact, overlooked. So I want to give those people their props. So I'm going to throw it to you, Mark, first of all. What's your first one?
It's quite an obvious one, but I'd feel wrong leaving it off the list. So it's Tom Hanks in Toy Story, obviously as the voice of Woody. Toy Story we talked about recently, about how Pixar gave us this film that came from nowhere, that was just a game changer, following on from the last topic. And I love Toy Story. I think it's an absolute classic, and I still watch it now knowing it's 20 years old and it still looks great. I love the sequel and I love the third. And some people, I think, God, talking back 30 episodes for us, would agree that the sequel's maybe better than the first, which is crazy to say, but
We've had this before. I think one is better than two.
Arguably. But this voice performance is sensational. And it's the reason I think it's so good is I don't think it's Tom Hanks. Mm. When some performances happen on screen, I can't switch off and I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so. So all I ever picture in my head is the person that's done the voice. In this, I forget it's Tom Hanks. I think that's Woody. And he's amazing. It sounds ridiculous, but he's so animated. He's so, the vocal range he does is so
he's fairly animated, yeah.
But he's sensational, and I absolutely love him, and I think he's just full of kind of beans, and he's got it all going. I love him.
There's a snake in my boot.
Reach for the skies.
But it's iconic, and whenever I watch it again, it's just, I love him. I love him, and I'll be honest, I love Buzz Lightyear as well. But
yeah, Tim Allen's great as Buzz Lightyear.
Some stunning performances, but yeah, that's my first one cemented in there.
I think that's fair enough. And Toy Story is a masterpiece. I think we'll all agree with that.
It did change
the game, as we spoke about. So
yeah, and I think to be the leading man or woman in an animated film, there needs to be a certain warmth. Your voice has to drag people in because you're going to be listening and focusing on that.
Yeah, a certain gravitas and charisma.
Yeah, exactly. And Hanks has all of that warmth, gravitas, charisma in spades. He was the perfect and ideal choice. And it might have been one of those where, putting aside the fact that it was a revolutionary new style of filmmaking, it might not have been successful were it not for the voice work of Tom Hanks and having his name attached to it, especially.
Pixar got everything right with that film.
Absolutely. Flawless.
Keeping in with the Pixar theme, I think there's probably going to be at least one Pixar, maybe in all of our lists. I'm going to go with Steve Buscemi, Randall Boggs from Monsters, Inc.
Nice.
We spoke before about Monsters, Inc. and how much I think Monsters, Inc. is great. Probably one of the most perfect animated films Pixar have ever done, if not the best they've ever done. Steve Buscemi's performance opposite Billy Crystal, John Goodman, is just that perfect foil for both of those guys.
Mm.
And Buscemi has a very distinct voice anyway.
Yeah.
But the character they've created for his voice and his voice matching that character is just that perfect marriage for me. And I mean, Randall, everything Randall does for me, every line kind of cuts through you.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes him that kind of memorable villain as well.
Yeah. And it was perfect casting, because Steve Buscemi has made a career of playing little Weasley characters. Mm-hmm. And that is really what Randall is. And it's perfect.
But I absolutely love it. And I think one of the things that you kind of touched upon there, Mark, is when you watched Toy Story, you didn't realise it was kind of Tom Hanks. You knew it was Tom Hanks, but it changed it. This was a theme I noticed when researching this. It gave a lot of actors a chance to kind of step out of what they're known for doing and into something where they could be a bit more free. Because instead of being typecast, instead of being known as the guy who did this, it allowed you to take your face away from it. People didn't know who you were and just add your voice to something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you can see from researching that how many actors it gave a second chance sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting, actually, when actors come to it late. I was watching an interview the other day with Ed O'Neill, who plays Jay in Modern Family and was Al Bundy in Married with Children. And he's now playing one of the characters in the upcoming Finding Dory. And he'd never done, in his long career, I think he must be edging 70 now, in his long career, he'd never done a voiceover role before. And he was saying about how different and strange it is coming to this and how it is completely freeing. You've not got people looking at you, for one thing. You're in, you're out. You're not necessarily actually with the other members of the cast. Mm-hmm. You can record it in isolation. It's a whole different way of filmmaking. It is interesting for actors to come to it, especially late in their careers.
Yeah, and it means you don't have to match up everyone's schedule
absolutely.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you my first one then. I'm going to go with a pretty new one. I'm going with Will Arnett as Batman in the Lego Movie.
Lovely.
I thought his take on Batman, the gravelly voice version of it, was perfect, because Will Arnett has a very deep gravelly voice as it stands. Anyone who's ever seen Arrested Development will know this. And then he kind of used that to great effect to amplify the Christian Bale type of gravelly voice, I'm Batman. And he took that to the nth degree. And I just think it was so, so funny. He was my favourite part of the Lego Movie by a distance. So I was kind of delighted when they announced there's going to be a specific Lego Batman. It could have just been an obvious cash. It is an obvious cash in. I'm not denying that. But I am glad about it. I'm glad that is the character they chose to cash in on, because I just love his work in that film.
Yeah, it's a great performance. I mean, the Lego Movie, I looked at as well when researching this, and there's a couple that I could have put in there. Mm-hmm. That was one of them. Chris Pratt as Emmett Brokowski as well. I quite liked his voiceover work. Didn't quite make my list, unfortunately. But yeah, Will Arnett as Lego Batman was great.
I'm really looking forward to his own movie.
Yeah.
The trailer. Is it next year? I think it's a year away.
It's been pushed back, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
So that trailer was hilarious for just two minutes.
Really funny.
Give it me now. Moving on from that, I'm going for a Disney film, and unfortunately he's no
moving
longer
on from Pixar.
But unfortunately he's no longer with us. Robin Williams as the genie in Aladdin.
Old school.
Old school. I don't think there's much better casting than this as a voice for a performance. Think of anyone else trying to do that kind of role. Mm. Impossible. Mm. He is amazing. His voice in stuff like Mrs. Doubtfire is hilarious. You always remember the kind of pitch he does. Oh, hello! That's the worst impression ever.
Well, I don't know. If anyone heard the imitation game, that's not the worst one you've done.
I should have had Robin Williams, but yeah. I think he's absolutely hysterical, and I love his voice in the way of every role he does is very different. Mm-hmm. He can do serious acting, which we've seen, but we can also see the really kind of comedy and the stupidness. But he adds that kind of energy to this performance of the in Aladdin as the genie, which I don't think, I've said it, no one else could do that. No one could do justice like that.
Well, I agree with you there. I think, again, it was a bit like the sort of Steve Buscemi one, it was kind of the perfect marriage of character and voice actor. Mm-hmm. When Will Arnett was first announced as Lego Batman, it was one of those ones where you kind of, I was kind of unsure on it. I was like, I don't know how that's going to work.
Yeah.
It did work in the end. It was great. But with Robin Williams and Aladdin, the moment you hear that Robin Williams did that voice, you were like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, of course.
He could do anything.
Of course he played that character. When they wrote that character, they must have had him in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have thought so.
Literally, give him anything, not now, but give him any job to do, and he would have done it perfectly.
I might be wrong, but does he do the sort of street salesman at the start as well?
Oh, I don't know.
I think he does that one as well in Aladdin.
I need to look now, because I'm not sure. If he is, that's... So. Very good going.
Do you know what's quite funny? I'm looking at my list of three that I've picked here, and I've gone for all three from CGI films. And I don't think that's accidental. I just think when I think of animated films, I don't think back to the old hand-drawn Disney. It didn't even cross my mind to think of Aladdin or The Lion King or anything like that. My mind immediately went to sort of post-Pixar movies. Yeah. Odd, isn't it?
Go deeper.
That's what she said.
Adam, what you got next?
Yeah, on that. I'm going to go with... Eddie Murphy, Donkey from Shrek.
Donkey!
Now, this was at that point in which Eddie Murphy's career was kind of tailing off.
Mm.
Well, I suppose it was the point it was tailing off before the point it was tailing off. And after the point, it started tailing off as well. And then it started tailing off further. So he basically, this was before he started tailing off. Then he did something good. Then he tailed off again, dropped the Norbit on us. And that was that.
Big time.
But this is one of the... Just, again, another perfect marriage of character and voice actor. Eddie Murphy as Donkey kind of makes that film what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Shrek is... I love Shrek. I think it's an absolutely hilarious film. And just some of the lines that I don't think any other voice actor could have delivered them.
No.
As well as Eddie Murphy did. And it was off the back of... I think he'd done the Nutty Professor one. So his career had started going downhill quite heavily.
Hey, what do you mean? Good movie, that.
Is it? Is it really?
It's all right. Bit of fun.
It's already changed. It's all right now. but I think it looked like he was going to get his career back on track, and then Meet Dave, I think, happened, and Shrek 2.
Oh, dear. The Adventures of Pluto Nash.
Shrek 2, yeah. Shrek 3, Shrek 8, 9, 10. That franchise is died a death now.
It's coming back.
It's coming back, yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, he goes really well with Mike Myers, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
As Shrek. He does a Scottish accent absolutely phenomenal, and his delivery of that is great. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'm sure them two would have been next to each other in the studio playing off each other, because it's too well done if they're in isolated studios. Never. They've got to have been there high-fiving and absolutely loving it, because it's perfect. The energy is...
There is a certain amount of chemistry, isn't there, between the two?
Absolutely.
I think that kind of helps with each other's performance.
Yeah. Big time.
But I just think Murphy was just kind of a cut above for this.
He was superb. Just thinking about Eddie Murphy, I was reading an interview the other day with Chris Rock, and we've talked many times on episodes about how it's a shame that Eddie Murphy's career has just died on its ass. And Chris Rock was talking about how, even these days, he goes to Eddie Murphy throws these parties, whenever there's a big fight on, you know, a big boxing championship, he throws these luxury parties, and his mansion is filled wall-to-wall with comedians. And Chris Rock said he is still the funniest man in the room. Every time, he is the funniest man in the room at every party. He slays everyone, he's got the best material, he's the quickest. And you think, get on stage and do something with it then.
Yeah, do stand-up.
Do stand-up again. Or commission a good script, get a better agent. Yeah. If you're still that funny that you're cracking up all the other comedians, cracking up people like Chris Rock, who is a genius at this thing, you know, get out there and do good work, for the love of Christ.
It's weird, like, maybe he's not really done a lot recently. Maybe
I was just about to say.
He's just trying to take a step away from the limelight, and he's a family man now, isn't he?
Mm.
They do say you'll never bounce back from an orbit. Once you've dropped it, it'll never be.
It is difficult to
impossible.
Forget a big Norbit.
Yeah, very true. Okay. Keeping with the same series of films, my next choice is Antonio Banderas as Puss from whichever Shrek he was in, and the Puss in Boots film.
Yeah,
I love that. Again, you know, we're going to say this 10 more times probably, but it's that melding of character and an actor. His sort of Spanish Lothario, that's the kind of role he always plays, Banderas. The guy who played Zorro is the perfect guy to play this swashbuckling tabby cat.
His eyes.
He's got those big, huge saucer eyes, hasn't he? And the voice is just so, like, thick.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's superb. And again, I think it must have been a case of when they sat down and thought, who can we put in Shrek 2? What other character can we bring into it? Antonio Banderas is interested in doing a voice role. Right, I've got an idea. And they must have wrote that knowing that he wanted to be. Come into this, because it is perfect for him.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of anyone else I would want to play that role other than maybe Mandy Patinkin.
Exactly.
Just doing Princess Bride.
My name is Puss in Boots.
Yeah.
You killed my father.
I'm prepared to die.
Oh, man, I want to watch that now.
Yeah, the standalone Puss in Boots film is really good. I took my little brother to see it when it came out a few years back, and it's very, very funny.
It was odd, because it was. I honestly thought it was going to be one of the worst pieces of trash I'd ever seen.
Mm.
But it actually is very good.
Yeah. And he holds it all together, just that voice. He's just brilliant and hilarious.
I've just realised my final choice is Disney again.
Mm.
So Disney, if you're listening to this, send us some merch and stuff.
Get us into Star Wars Rogue One and Episode 8 premiere screening.
Yeah, that'd be
good.
Be lovely.
So mine is John C. Reilly as Ralph in Wreck-It Ralph.
Awesome.
Now, Wreck-It Ralph is quite recent, really, and I think it was done really well, especially for gamers out there. They were all saying loads of little in-jokes and little kind of nods to stuff. But I just enjoyed it for just being a way out, really random, stupid storyline, but it just worked.
Yeah.
But John C. Reilly's voice is hilarious. I love him in everything he does, but it's one of the first films I'd seen that he had done a voice performance, and I thought, I wonder if it's going to work. I wonder if he's going to try something different. He was just himself, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
He didn't need to try and do some silly accent. Or just be yourself and talk and read the lines, and it worked perfectly.
That's good, because John C. Reilly always comes across as a kind of a big lovable lug, and that's what Ralph is, a big lovable lug, and his voice was just spot on.
It really is, and I could... The film itself is really good. Mm. It's not incredible.
I love it.
Do you love it?
I think it's magnificent.
It's superb.
Yeah.
I really do.
Is it a masterpiece?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh,
I absolutely love Wreck-It Ralph. I think it's one of the greatest films of the last
Are we getting a second one?
Years.
I don't know, actually.
I'm unsure on that.
Yeah.
I don't want them to do another one. I kind of want it to
Leave
stay
it as it is.
As it is.
Exactly.
I think it's quite bookended in the way it kind of starts and finishes, and it's
And Adam, I know it's technically your pick next, but I'm going to jump one ahead of you because I've got Sarah Silverman as Vanellope in Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, yes.
Because I absolutely love that film. And I think across the board, it has some of the best voice work. John C. Reilly, Sarah Silverman, Jane Lynch, Mindy Kaling. It's a brilliant, brilliant cast. So Sarah Silverman was the standout for me because she has a very kind of sickly, sweet voice in real life. And that's what serves her well as a stand-up comedian, because she tells the dirtiest, most vulgar jokes. But because she does it in this sickly, sweet voice, she gets away with it. So to then have her use that voice in a more appropriate character, it just worked like gangbusters. She is, for me, my favourite all-time vocal performance, Sarah Silverman as Vanellope in this film. Love it.
That says a lot.
A hell of a lot.
It's very high praise, but I can't really argue there,
no,
because it is a fantastic performance. And like you said, it's a very strong voice cast start to finish in that film. That wasn't Pixar either, was it? That was like
just
Disney's
Disney animation.
Yeah.
Which means I haven't actually had a Pixar film out of my three, I've just realised.
that's
odd,
a surprise.
Yeah.
So finish it, Adam.
Yeah, my last one is, I guess it's kind of a cheat.
Oh, here we go.
It's Mark Hamill as the Joker.
There was a film.
Batman Mask of the Phantasm. There was Batman Beyond as well, which he played the Joker in, straight to TV. It started off as the animated series in sort of 93. But his voice acting as the Joker in everything he does, from Mask of the Phantasm, animated series, Batman Beyond, even the early Arkham games when he joined in for them as well, is perfect.
Yeah.
Everything about it, from pitch to delivery, it's what you hear when you read the Joker, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
He is absolutely nailed on, perfect. He is better than Ledger.
In the way
he performs the Joker. We see a similar thing when he plays the trickster in Flash. He's been on screen there a few times. It's very kind of I guess, camped up in a way, like, but it has that real undercurrent of just sinister to it as well. And that is what really kind of adds a lot of spice to his lines, mm-hmm. especially in those sort of animated versions where it's kind of really made for children. So it's not as, I guess, not as dark not as dark. Batman usually is. But his voice kind of adds that sinister edge to it. And it's, I mean, the only other person you could put near him for me is Troy Baker. Troy Baker does a very good Joker as well, but Hamill is the quintessential Joker.
Well, it's one of those things I've read over the years, a few lists when people rank their favourite Jokers in film, TV and animation. And invariably, he's in the top three. If you were to look at a list now, generally speaking, people tend to put him with Nicholson and Ledger, you know, which says something, especially when, you know, when you're brought with people whose main focus is watching movies. Mm-hmm. The fact that this guy who's done animated TV version is held up there with the movie stars says
a
lot.
And voice acting kind of, it really did offer him another chance at acting, as I said earlier, because after Star Wars his career kind of petered off quite heavily. He was seen as Luke Skywalker everywhere kind of went. I don't think many people really wanted to employ him because you just see Luke Skywalker. He probably got a lot of offers for similar roles in like leading sci-fi roles, so voice acting really gave him another means to express himself. And obviously now he's once again one of the kind of top dogs up there. Everyone knows his name again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. You can have it.
Thanks, Mark.
Imagine you've done all that and said you're not having it.
So you got to come up with another one.
Here's the guys from social media. Okay, so Arcane, Arcade Show, Terry Hatcher for Coraline.
Okay.
Ellen D. Well, how'd you say her name?
DeGeneres.
There we go, from Finding Nemo. Yep. And they agree with Mark Hamill from Batman, Mask of the Phantasm.
He said Phantasm right. I didn't think he was going to get that right.
Popcorn Heart, our good friend Gemma, has said Catherine O'Hara from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, Sally.
Yes. Robin Williams for the Genie in Aladdin. And Trey Parker for Satan in South Park movie.
I like his Saddam Hussein in South Park.
Hey, relax, guy.
I got like every voice.
Every voice they've ever done. Chris, which is at Gel Nerd, John Ratzenberger has just put Pixar King.
Yeah, he's in all of them.
That's it.
He's their lucky charm. Done. That's what they always say about him.
Tom Hanks for Woody and Dickie Jones in Pinocchio. Sam Loy with Sacha Baron Cohen in Madagascar.
I've never seen that.
I don't think many have. And they're going to say every role for Trey and Matt in a South Park movie.
Yeah.
Helen Nutter said, nothing will ever top Tom Hanks in Toy Story, but recently she enjoyed Zootropolis and it was Idris Elba.
Oh,
I've not seen that.
No, me neither.
He's got a very distinct voice.
Yeah. Right then, next topic. Quite an easy one again. There's going to be lots of choice, but I'm excited to see what we go with. It's going to be your top three sidekicks in film.
Okay,
interesting.
Cool.
Lots of choice. I'm looking forward to seeing what you got.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see new animated film, The Secret Life of Pets. Stars a really great voice cast, actually, including the likes of Louis C.K., Kevin Hart, Steve Coogan, Ellie Kemper, Bobby Moynihan, Lake Bell, so on and so forth. It tells the story of a little Jack Russell Terrier, played by Louis C.K., who loves his owner and hates it when she leaves for work. He then gets into various scrapes with the other dogs and cats and birds that are in the neighbourhood. One day his owner comes back home with a brand new dog called Duke for him to live with, played by Eric Stone Street from Modern Family. And then one day they're arguing outside and they end up losing the rest of the dogs that are out walking with them and end up on an adventure and have to try and find their way back home.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Yeah, I was pretty proud with that one. Yeah, not too bad. So what do we think about the film? Give me your instant thoughts, Adam. So it's a good, fun family film. When you walked out of that cinema just now, what were your instant thoughts?
I think you've just kind of summed it up, really. A good, fun family film. Mm-hmm. Very enjoyable. Just kind of sit there. You don't really have to pay a lot of thought. You can just enjoy what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Yeah, I feel like I've been entertained. It was a nice little roller coaster ride, and I just enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun in the cinema, and I didn't have to really think a lot, and I just enjoyed it for what it was. And it's nice to actually have this as a first animation for us and not have loads of action and deep story. It was a good ride, that.
Yeah. I thought it was an absolutely delightful Toy Story remake. Because let's be serious, that's what it was. It was a great film, and I loved it deeply. But it was about what happens with pets when their owners aren't there. Their owners aren't there, the pets have parties and they're talking and whatnot. The toys come alive when their owners aren't there. This was about one pet, Max, who was like Woody, who then has another pet, Duke, who infringes on him like Buzz does. And it's about them going off onto adventures and then becoming bestie mates by the end of it. It was really, in a nutshell, Toy Story over again, but it was done well, so, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I like how you used the word infringed.
Not legally infringed. I don't want to try and get a lawsuit going here. Similarities are purely coincidental, I'm sure.
Are we at that stage already with the time that's passed where we're like, this is the Toy Story for today's generation? Because I know fairly old, if that's the case.
Yeah, I think if you looked hard enough into a lot of kids' films, you'd just find similarities with films from 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
I think it's just kind of a standard thing now. Because you know, when you're 8 or 9 or 10, you're going to watch a film, enjoy it, and then the next crop of 8 or 9 or 10 year olds are going to need their own film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unsurprising that it's got a lot of similarities.
Yeah, similarities is a polite way of putting it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Alleged infringement, apparently.
Let's talk about the animation. So for me, Pixar have dropped the ball recently quite a bit. I didn't really enjoy Brave, I'll say it now. I just didn't really get much from it. I thought it was a bit boring.
Yeah.
I've watched is it The Last Dinosaur?
Good Dinosaur.
The Good Dinosaur, and I don't even see, it's that forgetful, I don't know the title. I just didn't really like it. Nothing really happened. It didn't do much for me, and I just feel like, don't get me wrong, Finding Dory is probably going to bounce back and be phenomenal. I love that first film, but early reviews in America are saying it isn't, so I'm hoping for my own sake, but I just think they haven't really had that smashed it out of the park recently.
They're putting out too many films.
Yeah.
There was a time where they would put out one film a year or maybe one every couple of years. Now they're putting out 2 or 3 a year and they're just not good enough.
So you're not looking forward to Cars 3?
Not so much. Not so much.
Or Boats. But hats off to these guys. The animation was brilliant.
Mm.
The detail for New York, where this film is set, was stunning.
Looks amazing.
The actual detail of every building being exactly where it should be, not just, oh, that's New York and a little short. The height, the One Tower building, the Freedom Tower you saw stand above, the reflections of all the glass, everything. I was like,
Central
New York
Park
looks stunning in such an animated, over-the-top way, but I knew that was it.
It's weird because it's one of those cities where it's very difficult to kind of do, but you should get it right if you do it. It's not like it's an unknown city on the back that you're trying to recreate. There's enough pictures of New York to get it right.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, say in like Des Moines, Iowa, where no one's going to know if you got it right or not.
But they could have done one scene just set in, you know, near the Empire State and, oh, it's New York. But they did it all. They did the Brooklyn Bridge. Mm-hmm. They did all the sites. And it looked fantastic. Yeah.
It was a good, fun film. There was a lot of... didn't really feel like high stakes, I think, maybe because you knew... As an adult, you kind of know they're going to get home.
Yeah.
There's going to be no issues. Mm-hmm. Nothing's going to be wrong. There was one sort of weird moment where they revealed that Duke's old owner had died.
Yeah.
And that was a bit like, whoa. Then some kids started screaming.
Yeah, that's par for the course when you go and see a kid's film at the cinema. There's going to be screaming kids, and boy, there were.
But they kind of overlooked that bit. Like, in Up, it's a massive, oh, his wife's died, and you're like, oh my, literally, I'm going to cry. In this, it was like, okay, so the old man that's brought him up, that's been his companion, his best friend, has now died. Oh, but don't worry, someone else has moved in, let's get back on with the story. And I do kind of wish, like, they'd played on that a bit more, and we'd actually found out if he was dead, or is he alive? Perhaps he'll be in the sequel, I don't know, but is he dead? Who knows? There should be.
They didn't do anything with it, did they? He didn't
mourn
the loss of his...
So he kind of looked sad, and don't worry, it's just the wrong address, come on.
Mm.
So what do we think to the individual voices then? So the main character, Max, was played by Louis C.K., brilliant comedian that I know Mark, you and I especially are fond of. What do you think to him?
Louis C.K., for me, could read the Bible, which is the most boring shit in the world. And I would love to hear about it if it's his voice. I love his voice.
Yeah.
And it was great to... This film's an hour and a half. It felt like about an hour.
Yeah.
And again, like we said with Tom Hanks, I switched off after 10 minutes and forgot it was Louis C.K. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to be reminded of, oh, that's one of my favourite comedians. He did it well.
Yeah.
I want to see more now of him.
What do you think about Kevin Hart, Adam, as the main antagonist, a little bunny?
Yeah, I thought it was quite an interesting marriage between the actual, like, the look of the character and the voice of the character. I did enjoy it, though. I thought it was a lot of good fun. And Kevin Hart's one of those guys who he is quite funny just generally.
Yeah.
So he can seem to make, he seems to make anything work.
He does, yeah. He's a very good stand-up comedian, and he has just got one of those voices. It's kind of shrill, shrieky voices that is inherently funny, I think. And as you say, the juxtaposition of that voice with a tiny little bunny was quite funny. But here's my bet now. Before they do a sequel to this, which they probably will do, I think there'll be a spin-off starring the bunny.
Yeah.
That's probably. I'm putting cash money on that now.
A prequel.
Probably.
Showing what happened to the bunny
could
beforehand.
Could well be, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And how he acquired this massive pets in the sewer.
Doing his evil bidding.
And Ricky, who he keeps... remembering his fallen comrade.
The late lamented Ricky.
What do we think of Erin? Her name is Erin, and you can't refer to her.
As in Ellie Kemper.
Yes.
She's not in it that much. She plays the owner of Mansion Duke, so she's only in a couple of scenes.
But I liked it. Anything with The Office is good for us.
Yeah.
Who was Steve Coogan? What role was he?
Steve Coogan was the little sort of cockney sphinx cat.
Yeah, the alley cat.
I was sitting there thinking, what part's he playing?
He was great.
Because Jenny Slate's in it as well, Gidget. Mm-hmm. And she's, we know her from Parks and Rec.
We do, yeah.
As Mona Lisa Saperstein. Yeah. Probably one of my favourite characters in Parks and Rec.
Yeah, seeing her and John Ralphio together is always amazing.
She was playing a very different role.
Yes.
In this.
Very sweet, badass little cat.
Yeah, which is cool.
But I thought all the voice work, again, across the board was spot
Eric
on.
Stone Street, great.
And so some of the jokes were fantastic as well. So some of the dialogue, I mean, there was a few times I think I probably kind of laughed out loud to myself.
Yeah, me too.
There was one where I think he's talking to Duke, and Duke says, I ran away from home chasing a car or a butterfly or something. It took me 2 hours, but eventually I caught it and ate it. And Max just goes, probably the butterfly.
So subtle.
I laughed out loud at that. And that was one of many. There were a lot of jokes like that. It's one of those films where they've done it so well that there's enough silly humour and bright flashing lights for kids to love it, and enough one-liners or, you know, little jokes like that for us, people of our age, to enjoy it as well.
What about the music choices? Now, we all know we love decent metal rock music. To have System of a Down in a kid's film, and that song is about, isn't it about shagging? Bounce, I'm sure it's about...
Could well be.
I think it is. So to put that in there quite subtly, to put that in about quite subtly...
Yeah.
This poodle dog is obviously listening to classical music, and his owner, you've seen it on the trailer, I'm sure, but he leaves and is like, goodbye, Cuthbert, or something, and it's like this classical music playing. As soon as he steps out, you even see the iPad change, the iPod change to the artwork of System of a Down, and it's, and it's phenomenal. I love all these, like,
very, very
every time it says bounce, you get all these little random dogs just jump out from behind the sofa and bounce. It's really well done. And there was another section of more metal. I don't know who the band was later on.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. I noticed it later. I didn't know who it was. And there was also No Sleep Till Brooklyn by the Beastie Boys in there as well. It was a good soundtrack.
It's good. It's
and
not
enough
good.
For Taylor Swift.
I didn't know that.
Okay, then. Thanks for that, Adam.
Welcome to New York.
Okay, cheers.
I don't know where we go from Taylor Swift.
I don't know where we go from that. The score was really good.
I don't think she knows where. I don't think Calvin Harris knows where.
I'm not having this conversation because I don't give a fuck. Honestly, I couldn't care less about that woman.
She's going out with Tom Hiddleston.
I don't give a shit. I don't care. Not interested. The score for the film is pretty good as well. And I've just read that it was by Alexandre Desplat, who has like 11 Oscar nominations, has won an Oscar. And this is a guy who does the scores for...
It's not a good record.
For really... I don't blame him, though. You know. There's always tough competition in that field. But, you know, this is a guy who's done scores for things like The Imitation Game, Grand Budapest Hotel, Argo, and now he's doing The Secret Life of Pets.
There's a couple of times where he gets nominated against himself, to be fair.
That's true, yeah, that happened in 2015. Grand Budapest Hotel and Imitation Game was the same year. Yeah.
I wonder what makes him go,
and
like,
he beat himself.
I want to change. who won? I just want to be like, I just want to change. What are you going to do? Well, after Imitation Game, it's quite serious. I'm going to do a dog film.
I was thinking, that must be really mixed emotions when you get announced as the winner, but you're also the loser.
I think the happy outdoes the sad, though.
But yeah, I thought the animation was fantastic, and it's nice to see it's not just Pixar and Disney owning it right now, because DreamWorks never quite get it right, do they, as well? They bring out these films that don't... for some reason, they'll bring out their Ants out, and then they'll bring out Bugs Life, and they're very similar, and Disney and DreamWorks and other companies are always kind of... You think, well, that's a bit too similar to that. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you've done this. I think there's one... Well, when Finding Nemo came out, it was something like Shark Tale. It's a bit too similar. Yeah. But these guys have just come along and gone, right, we're doing our own little film. I know you said it's based on Toy Story, but that's 20 years, you know. Let's just do something about pets. A bit random. You know kids are going to want every little toy out of this one. Everyone's going to want a Max cuddly toy from this. And if you do want one, you know, check out our Twitter feed. But also, you know, but you know, I like the way they've just come out of nowhere with this film. We only saw the trailer a couple of weeks ago, and you know it's going to get some serious money.
Well, it was funny because I remember you mentioned this film to me. And I'd not heard of it. And then the next day we went to the cinema and they showed the trailer for this. And you were like, this is the one I was talking to you about. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. And then by the end of it, I was like, this is hilarious. Let's go and see this.
Yeah, because Ben notoriously hates any animals.
Well, I don't hate them. I just have no interest in them. I don't see the point in them.
When they've all got pets, Ben sitting there thinking, why?
I don't know why anyone would have an animal in their house. Animals outdoors, humans indoors. That's it. I don't know why that's such a confusing thing for people to understand about me. I don't understand the concept of pet ownership. Why would anyone have an animal shitting and stinking up their house? Put them outside.
What if it's a goldfish that doesn't really make much mess?
What's the point? What do they do? Why would you have one? What? At least I can understand what a dog does, but I still wouldn't have it in my house. What does a goldfish do? Sit there going... Rubbish.
What if you taught the dog to bring Strongbow dark fruit from the fridge?
And pour it.
Forget a dog, but if I could get like a little chimpanzee that could do that or something, and as long as it was self-cleaning... And self-feeding.
Showered itself.
Yeah, if I had to do nothing towards its upkeep, then I'd consider it.
Like Ross's off Friends, would you put it like
Marcel.
Outfit? What outfit would he wear?
A little belt, like a bellhop outfit from a hotel.
Would he have like a little like flat cap as well?
Oh, maybe, like for the weekends.
Why don't we know what we're getting him for his birthday? I was worried that we were getting off topic here, but you know, this is it. Anything else you want to say about this film?
No, I think I'm about done.
Yeah.
It's good fun. It's a comedy.
Yeah, it's good fun.
It was good.
Yeah.
Good animation was great.
Good vocal performances, good animation, mm-hmm. Nice soundtrack. Good fun.
Yeah. Let's score it.
I'm going to go first. Maybe it's a bit too high, but I'm going to go 8. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it a lot.
I guess a solid 7 from myself.
Yeah, ditto. I'm going to give it a 7. I think it's a very good fun family film, well animated, slightly derivative of other things, but it does its job well. So overall, 7 out of 10.
It's competition time. On the last episode, this was a big one. A big, big prize, which we didn't actually plan this, but it was actually for the film that we've just reviewed. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't planned at the time.
We weren't intending to see this film at that point.
So we just...
Yeah,
you know,
I think it was Independence Day.
We just fixed it all in.
Yeah, synergy. Okay.
I'm glad we're not seeing Independence Day.
It looks shit.
it was a very good executive decision not to see that.
Yeah.
Big time. But thanks to Universal, they gave us a projector... A screen and a prize bundle, which includes the little Max toy, lots and lots of kids' toys like balloons, and you look on our Twitter, some good stuff in there. One winner wins the lot. The question I put out there was: Louis C.K. voiced which character in The Secret Life of Pets? We just talked about it quite a lot. Ben,
Max,
done. Do you want it?
Yes, please. I will take that projector and the screen quite happily.
The winner is King Bruno Baratheon.
Baratheon.
Baratheon on Twitter. So well done. You'll be getting that. And I want to see some pictures because the last winner recently put a big photo up on Twitter of them watching Gremlins on it and it looked incredible. Mm-hmm. So we want to see the same. But Universal have taken a week out. Our good friends, this time from Warner Brothers, have given us a Conjuring 2 prize pack. I've just seen that film at the weekend. It's pretty good.
Are you good? Yeah.
It's not bad. Quite like it.
Is that on the poster now?
It's quite good. And in this, you get a duffel bag, some earphones, a chino frill cap.
What?
Yeah. Nothing to do with Deftones, just chino frill cap. A thermal notebook, a baseball jersey, some t-shirts, and a lantern flashlight.
A thermal notebook?
Yep.
So a notebook
that
stays warm.
Your hands change. You're not, your hands don't change the colour. your hands don't colour. You have this notebook, and it's black, and when you put your hands on it, it turns red where your fingers have been.
I get you.
It's pretty good.
I get you.
Doesn't change your hands then.
No. That's on the next episode. But there's a lot of good stuff on there, and I'll put some pictures on our Instagram and Facebook and stuff. It's a simple one. Who directed The Conjuring 2? That's all you need to do. And if you want a hint, they also directed Fast and Furious 7. That's it. Let us know on Twitter, Facebook, email us, go on skiptheend.co.uk, and I'll announce the winner on episode 49 in 2 weeks' time.
We are well within the 80s now. We're actually coming to the end of the 80s for this now.
Mm-hmm. Well, technically the start of the 80s.
Well, technically the start of the 80s, you're right. We're going to party like it's 1979.
No.
Mark.
That's it.
Are you upset?
Oh, I thought you were going to throw it straight to me there.
No, no. Are you upset?
I am, but it's been so much fun. I just have to hold on to the positives.
Mm. Well, that's fair enough. That's
good
fair.
Attitude.
Yeah. Mm.
That's great. So I want to. It seems a bit pointless to start. I know what you've got.
What, for 1982?
Yeah.
You think you know what we've got?
We might. We could throw you off.
Go on, yeah. Go on then, Ben. Shock me.
E.T.
I of course have picked Blade Runner. It is the best film of 1982. It is the best film of every single year that's ever existed because it's the greatest film ever made. Mark will disagree with me with his choice, and he's going to pick an excellent film as well. But for me, this is the greatest film ever made, not just of the year. It's got an amazing story. It's beautifully directed by Ridley Scott. The acting by the likes of Sean Young and Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, is flawless. The dystopian street view and, you know, the way the city looks is amazing and was very new at the time. We look at that film now and we think, oh yeah, that looks like a dozen other films. True, but they all came after it. This was the first one to show that kind of metallic industrial dystopia, and it still looks amazing. As amazing today as I'm sure it did 34 years ago. It's flawless. I watch it more often than one human should watch any one thing. But I can't stop watching it because it's perfect.
34 years old. That is insane. Because it looks as like it's filmed yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There's films now that don't get it right, and they use better cameras, better technology, better CGI, green screen, everything.
Yeah.
You made a fantastic point there about how, yes, it does look like a lot of other films.
Yeah.
But this was the first.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Everything else, all the other films look like this.
Yes. Yeah. It's a textbook.
It is. It's perfect. So. And I can't go into too much detail. I can, but I'm choosing not to.
I want to. I'm enjoying this.
I know, but we've how many times have we spoken about Blade Runner?
Think of that first listener who's just
got, really mentioned it.
That first listener who's just come aboard. What's this podcast? I'll have a listen. I wonder what Ben likes. Oh, he's talking about.
It's for me Harrison Ford's second best performance, other than obviously Han Solo. You've got to put that as number one, and I'm sure Indiana Jones fans would hold that up there as well. It is the single best thing Rutger Hauer has ever done. His performance as Roy Batty is so moving and heartbreaking from a character that is meant to be a robot, bearing in mind his death scene and the soliloquy he gives prior to his death is flawless. Arguably the greatest scene in... I would argue that's the greatest scene in cinema. The whole Tears from Rain scene still to this day gives me goose pimples. I feel like the hair on my arms raise up when I watch that scene every damn time. I can't say enough superlatives about this film. If anyone is out there and hasn't seen this film, I'm not going to have a go at you for it because I hadn't seen Jaws until a year ago. So if you haven't seen this film, just go and watch it now. You will not regret it. It's the best.
And a serious question. I own a 5-disc Blu-ray box set.
Yes.
There's this cut, that cut, every other cut. What is the one cut that you watch if this is your first time?
The final cut.
Yeah.
The final cut is the one that is how Ridley Scott wanted it to be, and it doesn't have the bullshit, unnecessary narration.
Cool.
There are about 6 different cuts, I think, and I think maybe 2 or 3 of them have the narration. Avoid those like the plague. If you get a cut of any cut that doesn't have the narration, you're onto a winner, but get the final cut.
Mark.
So, I can't really argue that, you know, the passion you just give me there is enough to go, yeah, do you know what it is, the best film ever made, blah, 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 but you're wrong. John Carpenter's The Thing.
Tremendous.
Come on then, why? Why is that better than Blade Runner?
Because this guy didn't have as much money to play with. This guy went out into conditions that were really bloody hard to work in. This guy had practical effects that no one else has matched even 34 years later. This guy did stuff that you think should be CGI, it wasn't. This guy got Kurt Russell with a beard kicking ass, making you have suspense that you've never had before, that makes you sit on the edge of your seat, even if you've seen it for the 5th time, thinking, when the hell is that blood going to explode when he puts that hot prod thing in it? It is ridiculously scary.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the alien looks and acts and sounds and moves is terrifying. John Carpenter produced something there which he shouldn't have done with that amount of money with the people he worked with, but he did, and it flopped. It didn't do very well. It came out and people were like, nah, it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
But to this day now, since he's gone on and made much, much more bigger films with bigger budget with big actors, he says to this day he will never top that film. Every film director out there, Edgar Wright, all the Steve Spielberg, everyone, they all love that film. It is literally a perfect movie.
Did I hate Blade Runner?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because they're both so different, but so good. Like, I can't argue that Blade Runner isn't the best film ever made or the best film of 82. It is just down to personal choice. And that's why I like Skip Back so much. Mm-hmm. I can never argue and say, oh, Blade Runner isn't as good. But Thing is just the film that I would watch before I died.
It's a great film. The practical effects, the alien creature effects, are so good and are still disturbing to look at 34 years on. The claustrophobia of the film leading to the tension of the film is still gets you. You feel claustrophobic watching it. It is an absolutely magnificent film. And one of the craziest things, and we've discussed this before, both of these films, The Thing and Blade Runner, came out on the 25th of June, 1982. It's not that they both came out in the same year. They came out in the US on the exact same day. My favourite film of all time, Mark's favourite film of all time.
Can you imagine if, like, I've done it before, I think I went to see, it was something like Fast and Furious 7, I came out and I had a bit of time and I went, do you know what, I'm going to go and watch, like, Indy 5 or whatever it was. Imagine going on a double, like, viewing that day. Mm. Oh, this Blade Runner's supposed to be good. Oh, let's go and watch The Thing. You would just jizz and just literally jizz again and just lie there in your own jizz going, I'm never going to the cinema again because nothing will top that.
Your sack would be empty.
It would be completely empty. And the person who comes up and clears up the popcorn would just be like, don't worry about it. I understand.
Yeah. That's an interesting topic there. Is that the greatest day in cinema history?
Ooh, that would take research. I mean, for me, I would argue yes, just off the top of my head, but it would take research, I think. But it's a hell of a day. And the thing is, you mentioned there that The Thing wasn't really a commercial success. No. Neither was Blade Runner.
No.
Neither film. It's not as if, you know, Blade Runner buried The Thing or anything. Neither of them were successful. It's only in preceding years that critics and fans have latched onto them, and they began, you know, at one point they were cult successes, and now they are held up as legendary films.
The one thing I want to say just before I stop talking about the things I've not talked about this when we did the rewatch is the soundtrack. Listen to it, download it, buy it, go on Spotify, wherever you can go, listen to it in its entirety from start to finish. You will hear sounds on there that are just unbelievable. And the best part is there was stuff they didn't use, and they've now put that in Hateful Eight, and you wouldn't have even known that. It's completely different, but that's how much respect Tarantino has. Is like, what? There's stuff that wasn't used. I'm having it.
Yeah, and it was funny that Morricone was like, okay, yeah, we'll reuse it. Why not?
Wow.
Yeah.
So now it goes to you, Adam.
And it could be a casting vote, or it could be a completely different film.
Well, I came here today undecided on which one I was going to choose, and I actually wanted to use this as an opportunity to have you both debate for my vote.
Oh, really? Well, if you'd have told us, we could have put more into it.
I didn't want it to be known. I want it to be a shock to both of you when I announce who wins. Who wins the vote? Blade Runner.
I won't rub it in, though, because The Thing is a phenomenal film.
It is. It was very, very close. I think Ben just put forward a few... The arguments surrounding, kind of, I guess, the more of the acting side of it, and of course, Roy Batty.
Yeah.
Rutger Hauer of Roy Batty. The arguments put forward. And the passion in Ben's voice as he spoke about the soliloquy.
Well, I'll have you know I was on the debate team at secondary school. So,
master debate team.
So there you go. I am the master debater. I think everybody knows this.
Blade Runner gets my vote.
What, so it was your love for Batty that made the choice. So that's what made the decision.
No, it was Ben's passion when he talked about
Batty. The Batty, okay.
That got my vote.
I don't feel like I've been defeated, and fair play, because I was sitting here thinking, I don't know what he's going to do. And I thought you might just go E.T. or something, just so you didn't have to choose.
I think if I had chosen E.T. ahead of The Thing or Blade Runner, Ben would have literally killed me.
It's such a difficult one, isn't it?
I wouldn't have had the wherewithal. I would have just said, get out. Or just toss that would have been the end of us, mate.
Toss a coin or something, you know what I mean? It's on different days,
There's no argument, really, with regards to it. It's just both films are absolutely... The fact they came out on the same day is just...
Mental.
What is going on?
Yeah.
Do you know what the craziest thing is? I was born on that day. How mad is that? That's lots of bullshit, but that would have been amazing. I wish. When I see my mum dying, I'm like, why didn't you do it a few months earlier?
We're your friend. We know when your birthday is.
Do you? I didn't get a present. I'm just saying that now, boys. I didn't get anything.
Yeah, and I didn't get any Tommy pants.
Yeah, okay. What I want to say, though, is when this was coming up to 1982, like Adam said at the start of this, we knew what Ben and I was going to choose. And I kind of thought, well, we're just going to go, oh, it's The Thing, oh, it's this. This is probably the most enjoyable time I've done Skip Back.
Mm.
I've really enjoyed just listening to Ben explain why he loves it so much and just getting a chance just to reconfirm that I love The Thing more than anything in the world. Ever.
It's been good.
It's been very good.
If we have anything, I can understand, we're going to get a few ETs from the listeners, but if we have anything other than ET, Blade Runner, and The Thing, I'll be shocked.
Well, like we said, it's down to personal taste, and there's not been many. I've got probably six choices because there was just loads of The Thing, obviously mm-hmm. The Thing, Blade Runner, The Blade Runner. But we'll start with something a bit different. Lewis Carney has said, Halloween free, because he's a sucker for shockingly bad horror films.
Mm.
I'm sorry, Lewis. But you're wrong in the way of that film is dreadful. But I understand.
It's not what is the best bad film of 1982. It's what's the best film. So yeah, that is mental.
Mark, can you just take out the Twitter now and just start blocking these people?
A good friend of the podcast, Elizabeth Marshall. Now, this is a good film. I think if it wasn't for The Thing and Blade Runner, we might look into it. Rambo First Blood.
Very good film. Mm-hmm.
She's put, it's an awesome film and the end made her cry.
Acceptable.
Yeah.
Alice Minted has put, I might lose all my cred, but mine is The Last Unicorn.
I don't even know what that is, but it sounds abysmal.
I think it's an animated film.
I hope so.
They didn't really get a horse and stick a like a New Day horn on its head.
So it's not a documentary.
And, well, let's watch it.
No.
Ken Major has put, there's so many black spots for him, and he has admitted, I don't think he's seen, the films, The Thing or Blade Runner. I might be wrong, because he said, you know, there's a lot there.
Do a double bill, pal.
Then you've got a lot of good viewing ahead of you.
But he's put, for now, it's E.T. And a lot of people love E.T.
And they do, but once he's seen Blade Runner and The Thing, maybe not so much anymore.
He'll throw his copy of E.T. in that same landfill where all the Atari E.T. games are.
And the inflatable E.T.s.
Sure.
I didn't shit on it.
Johnny, it's easy white clean though, isn't it?
Johnny P, which is at Johnny Zom, has put The World According to Garp, amazing Robin Williams film. And I'll put my hands up. I've not seen it.
Me neither.
BK on the Air, final one, and this is a film that a lot of people like. Star Trek II, The Wraith of Khan.
Wrath. it's either Wrath or Wrath, depending on how posh you are. It's not Wraith.
The Wraith of Khan.
Well, that's the Pound Shop version that came out on VCD that you could get. But that is a great film. As far as Star Trek movies go, that is one of my favourites.
Khan!
That's one I've watched. Brilliant film. 1981 next time, boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've already passed 82. Is there any good years after this?
1981 is not a strong year, I'll say that right now. And I'm not even just comparing it to 82, it's just not a strong year.
83 was pretty wank as well.
Yeah, it wasn't
it
great.
It was. Yeah. So, stick around for that really exciting 1981 in 2 weeks' time.
I set the rewatch last week, guys. The Avengers.
Hmm.
The 1998 film starring Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes.
I can't help but think you only picked it for the purpose of the joke of making us think you meant the
kind
good
of,
Avengers.
Yeah. I kind of picked it for two reasons. One, it was critically panned as one of the worst films ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And the second main reason was the fact of the cast involved in this film up against how bad it is.
Yeah.
So if you look at some of the names involved in the film, obviously we've got Uma Thurman,
yep.
Ralph Fiennes, Jim Broadbent,
yeah.
Fiona Shaw, Sean Connery, Eddie Izzard, quite a long list of famous people.
Sean Ryder from the Happy Mondays, inexplicably.
Even Keely Hawes, who was known for Ashes to Ashes later on in her career, things like that. So It's obviously a film on the 1960s TV series, an adaptation in 1998 about a mad scientist who's trying to control the world's weather, and agents Peel and Steed who are trying to stop him. Thoughts, Ben?
A totally unnecessary remake of a 1960s TV series that very few people gave a shit about in 1998. Why was this made? Who was clambering for this? Who? That's a genuine question I'm asking, Who was asking for this? Anyone? No?
No.
Why then? Why bother then?
So let's say it's a 1960s TV series, so at latest it ends in 1969.
Yeah.
The film is made in 1998. That is 29 years.
Yeah. And it's not as if it was a show that was held up as an absolute classic. It was culty, if anything. Culty in this country, almost entirely unknown in America. So why an American production company decided to make this film and then were shocked when it flopped, I'll never know. Even if it would have been a good film, which it isn't, but even if it was, it still would have flopped, because who gives a shit?
It's absolutely baffling to find who the target audience of this movie was.
Yeah.
Was it the people who 29 years ago were watching the TV series? Because as far as I'm aware, that was a very small number of people anyway.
Yeah.
It'd be as stupid as, like, imagine if someone released a Dad's Army film now.
Oh, wait.
But it would be like that, wouldn't it? Like, no one cares.
Dad's Army is beloved and in this country is on constant repeat. It's still on BBC Two every Sunday.
And I'd wager that Dad's Army got more viewers than the Avengers TV series did.
Yeah.
Good point.
But I take your point. It is utterly pointless. A remake of a random show. And again, it plays into something we've discussed previously, which is a lack of ideas in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Let's just drag up an old TV show that no one gives a shit about, but because all the ideas are already formed, we don't need to come up with anything new. We can just nick this.
And it is a completely ludicrous film as well. Like, there's a moment where Sean Connery is August de Winter, or whatever his name is, he's gathered all his sort of men round, and they're all dressed as teddy bears.
Yes. What was that about?
Why? And I can only think, as you said at the start of this, I can't help but think you only picked this rewatch for the sake of the joke.
Yeah.
Later on, Agent Steed says, when he finds one of the bodies, looks like the teddy bears are having a picnic. They had that entire scene on the basis that that joke was going to be made later on.
Oh, God. That's probably true, isn't it?
That's probably why.
The script... Mark's just sitting there shaking his head. Mark, contribute.
Thoughts, come on.
I want you to leave the podcast.
Oh, so do I. We'll get into that another day.
This is your hand in your notice. If you could do it any more bluntly, but I'm sorry, dude. Like, you know when you have to watch crap, and we've done it. We've done Wicker Man remake. We've done The Room. We've done these films that we punish ourselves with. This was on the next level. So hats off to you. You've topped the pile of even Battleship Earth for me. This is the ultimate dog turd of
Battleship
a film. Imagine that. That's what the world
needs.
That's
the sequel.
But Battlefield Earth, this is just painful. And not in the way of... We've watched some really bad films, like Freddy Got Fingered. It was really painful in the way of I kept looking on my Blu-ray player of how long I've got left. I kept pausing it so I could see, like, there's 1 hour 37 to go. I was like, okay, 1 hour 15. I was like, seriously, this is ridiculous.
Mm.
Some of the worst special effects I've ever seen. At the end where they're on that boat and it's obviously green screen. Green screen is the worst I've ever seen. And like you said, how old is this film? 1998.
Yeah.
What?
Under 20 years
old. We've
just
talked about films in 82 looking incredible. What happened in 16 years to make it even worse?
It looks so aged and cheap for a film that is under 20 years old.
And this is another thing that I as I was watching it from an analytical perspective, that I noticed. When is it supposed to be set?
I don't know, because they had really old-fashioned cars, but modern technology.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like they got, we really love the whole 60s vibe, but we want to set it in 1998.
Yeah.
So we're going to have some of the computers as well were like really old style computers.
Yeah. I didn't know, because there was a bit where I saw them driving in what was clearly, you know, a 1960s vehicle. And I assumed they were driving through London, and I thought they'd then drive past a modern car. But all the cars were 1960s vehicles, but they clearly wasn't set in the 1960s. I don't know.
If you know, tweet us, because we need to know this. It's not going to be on the net, because no one knows.
Yeah, if the director of the film is listening, because he won't be doing anything else.
He's killed himself.
Tweet in. what if it turns out now that he has?
Then I apologise on air.
Mark has some serious questions to answer to.
Well, he should have after watching it back. But I'm saying now, it's not a fun, bad film like Sharknado. It's not enjoyable. It's just painful. And fair play, you've picked something that's that painful. I've I'm never going to top it. I'm never going to try.
You're giving up, aren't you? Oh,
yeah. Finally, yeah. I've picked the worst film. We can start getting to actually watching good films on the rewatch then.
I'm going to pick a good one in a bit.
Well, what's good is when we do our third, going into our phase three, but our second year anniversary, we always pick our top five again and make sure we're happy, and our worst film.
Yeah.
This is it.
Oh, is this now this a contender?
Yeah, because Grimsby was shit, but it was shit because it knew it was shit, and it was so shit that the people that loved it made it shit, because I know that those sort of people would like that film. This, I can't think of anyone in the world that would turn around to me and say, you know, you've got to watch it again, Mark. If you watch it again, it then clicks, or, oh, but you're not getting it. You're not getting understand. It's.
I'm going to tell you right now, I think I'm probably the only person in the film going world that has watched this again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How badly did it flop? You're used
massively, yeah. Well, it didn't make back its budget, I know that much. I think it was something like, I think the budget was maybe 40 or 50 mil, and it made like 38 mil or something. It didn't make its budget back. But everything about it is just ropey. Like, the script is one of the worst I've ever heard. And some of the lines, there's one where I think Uma Thurman is with Sean Connery, and she says, oh, is it just the two of us? And he went, yes, like spoons in a drawer. What does that mean?
Yes. You only ever have two spoons.
Like spoons in a drawer.
That's what? Why I've never invited you both round to my house for a yogurt party, because...
I don't want to get to one of your yogurt parties, pal.
Because there's only ever two spoons, and I don't want you to have to eat a Muller corner on your own with the lid or something.
Just like a credit card.
Yeah.
And not just, you know, you've mentioned there the...
yogurt party.
Other than the yogurt party, you've mentioned the CGI and how ropey it was. Some of the stunt work was ropey as well. There's a car chase scene. Well, Ralph Fiennes' character is leaning out the back of the car, shooting a gun at these bees. Not the bees! For some reason, there are robot bees. I'm not going to go give you any more detail. But he's shooting them. And the stunt performer who's on the back of the car and the car's whizzing around is clearly not Ralph Fiennes, mainly because he has a completely different haircut. Ralph Fiennes has a fairly sort of, you know, modern businessman comb over, you know, swooped haircut. This guy, the stunt performer, had Anton Chigurh's haircut from No Country for Old Men. He had this bowl cut. It was not the same man. They've put no effort into this film at all.
Do you think the bowler hat just wouldn't stay on?
Yeah.
So they just put that bowl cut on and people thought it was a hat.
The closest thing they could get. But the thing that alarmed me is that this film was 89 minutes long. The original cut was 115 minutes.
Where can I get that?
Nowhere. But to think that when the distributor decided to put this film out, they looked at it and went, you've got to get rid of 26 minutes. That's a lot. That's a large chunk of the film. How bad could those 26 minutes have been if the rest of it stayed? How awful would it have to be to get cut from that abortion of a film? It's shocking.
The one good thing about it is when there's some films like Nicolas Cage's latest films or Bruce Willis, they do this bad film and they don't really recover because they've damaged their reputation and their CV so bad. Even like Pacino now, he's not going to do any serious films because he's just... He did the Dunkachino, that's enough.
Yeah.
At least every actor in this film bounced straight back and did good work again.
Except
people
Connery.
Took them seriously. Maybe, yeah, good point. But at least they didn't tarnish themselves that bad they could never ever get out of it, and that has happened to too many actors now, so good on them for that.
Yeah, that's true. Fiennes and Thurman had careers
and
afterwards.
To be fair, Sean Connery was a good baddie.
He was the least objectionable thing. Yeah. He was chewing the scenery. One of the things, though, was that his wig wasn't fully attached. there were points when his wig seemed to be sort of hovering above his head like a halo. It was bizarre. But he was quite good. Chewing the scenery like a giant rat.
The cast for this film is phenomenal.
Yeah.
You actually read it out.
That's the budget, isn't it?
And you listen to it. That must be where the budget went.
It wasn't green screen or effects.
Yeah.
But I can't remember. Did Uma Thurman do Batman and Robin and then this?
Yes, I think she did them in a short period of time.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a horrible double.
She owes Tarantino a lot because he was like, look, come on, here's Kill Bill.
Yeah.
This will revive your career.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Just
she
let me film your
two
feet.
Two steaming Norbits.
In the space of about 2 years, yeah. The thing that's upsetting about it, really, is because Fiennes and Thurman are both excellent actors, they had so little chemistry. There was no chemistry between them, and their awful forced efforts at witty banter were just not witty in any way. And that's the fault of the script, but also the fact they had no chemistry. When you screen test, when you cast one person, you then screen test the other people to go against them. Mm-hmm. How they could have ever have done a screen test with those two and been satisfied with the distinct ice between
Bingo.
Them. Yeah, as if you'd have gone, yeah, we found it, we've got them. No, they have no chemistry at all.
I don't know what it is, but you two have got it. Yeah, it's clear that you don't know what it is.
How much do you want paying? Fine.
I'd like to read if any actor in this film sacked their agent after it. I'd love to find out if that was
the case.
They should
have. All of them should have. Yeah.
keep talking because I just want to make sure the director hasn't killed himself because I will actually feel really bad about that.
Well, you looked that up and I thought Uma Thurman's English accent wasn't bad. It wasn't the best, but it wasn't bad. But there were times when it was clearly overdubbed.
It was the least offensive thing about the film, for sure.
I don't know if it was because her accent was bad or if it was her that did the overdubbing or if someone else did the overdubbing, but there were points where it clearly, the sync wasn't right between what was being said and how her mouth was moving. It was just a list of just shocking, awful things to happen.
He's not dead.
He's dead. He's not dead.
He hasn't done much, though, I won't lie.
What else, what's he done since?
He's done a lot of TV, so he's done stuff like Gossip Girl, Warehouse 13. He's done a lot of TV, but sort of one episode, so they've obviously gone, oh, let's get him in. Oh, he's still...
don't use him again.
He's not done any films. You want me to try and pronounce someone's name,
yes, dude? Please.
Justin Shilshek or something like that.
Jeremiah. S. Sherrick, something like that.
Jeremiah Chechik.
Chechik,
yeah. That famous director...
Yeah, him. Household name.
What I would say, though, is he did do Christmas Vacation.
Which is a very good film.
So fair play.
Yeah.
So he's done all right, but then he dropped the Norbit that was the ultimate Norbit of all time.
The ultimate Norbit. The biggest Norbit.
Even Norbit isn't the ultimate Norbit. This is.
Yeah. I hope there was the Skippies, the Norbit Awards. I like that. Maybe we should rename the Skippies just the Norbit.
We'll call them AKA the Norbit.
The Skippies brought to you by Norbit.
The Lifetime Norbit Award.
Yeah. Can we get a sponsorship deal with Norbit?
Do it.
We'll work on it. Let's score the bloody thing. I'm done with it.
Duck egg.
Really?
Yeah. So I haven't got any time for it. And I just want I want that time back. I'm annoyed.
You ain't getting it.
I'm annoyed.
Adam.
Yeah, zero.
Yeah. Oh, Christ. I'm going to give it one just for Sean Connery's wig. It's still 0 out of 10, though, isn't it?
Seriously, Ben, it's your choice. You need to pick something good because I'm getting a bit pissed off.
Well, here we go. Can either of you remember, and you're going to have to think back, can either of you remember when Johnny Depp was good?
Give me a sec.
We've done this before.
I liked him in Blow.
We've done this before, and I went and researched it, and I don't think the internet was alive then.
What about Tusk?
We're going back a little further than that. What we're going to watch next time round, guys, is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes! Nice.
It's time for round two of Lost the Plot, our very new game show. For those of you who weren't listening last time round, it is a game where we have a pot full of 12 films. Now, each player picks out 5 each, and the other person has to guess what the film is they're describing. You cannot use any words in the title of the film, any names of characters, any names of actors, any of directors, any crew, anything like that you cannot use. You can use words in the title if it's things like the,
yeah,
etc. You know, any kind of words that you just use generally in conversation. We had a bit of a situation last week where Mark started the rounds by describing things as the best film ever.
Can't do that.
Or the best action film ever. Mm-hmm. Giving away hints that weren't necessarily the plot. So we're getting very strict on this, as Ben was last week. We can't do that. You also... There's a slight bit more leeway in describing something as part of a trilogy or a
No, I disagree. I'm going to be harsh on myself here. Okay. I don't think we should be able to say things like this is a sequel because that's not the plot. You're pointing out that it's the second film. It's too much information.
Okay, that's fine, no problem. So we'll be strict on that as well today. So you can pass once. That's why there are 12 in the pot as opposed to 10. Last week, me and Mark did it. We got 6, I believe.
Yes, I think so,
Six or seven.
Six, so it's a team of Mark and Ben, which is...
Team Barky Bark.
Team Barky Bark this week. Here is the pot.
Can we just say now we're going to put it on Instagram and Twitter because Adam's gone out and got a really nice pot. This is better than the green. That's not a little hole thing, is it?
It is.
They're not going to get it through that hole.
No, there's a pink rim though.
Right. Honestly, pink. This pot's awesome.
So, Mark, are you going first? And have you designated yourself to go first on this?
If that's all right.
Of course.
I like the teamwork here, but I also... We'll just say this now. We have had a few tweets and Facebook posts saying, I can't believe you come here, you sit in this seat and you come on this game show. It's not easy. Okay? I'm just getting that
it's
off my chest.
No, it's not.
It's hard.
Is he still angry about hot cake?
Okay. So this film is about survival. And it is a number of school children basically killing each other.
Battle Royale.
Yes.
Boom.
I just want to say now, I've been researching every film ever made on IMDb this week. I've called in sick at work, and that's how you can hear the difference.
That's one. One.
Do you know what the worst part is? I nearly said, and they battle each other, but you've got to, it's so difficult.
It's a good job I jumped in before you said that then. This is a movie about superheroes set in the 1980s during a time when superheroes are banned. One of them has nuclear powers and is significantly more powerful than the others. Another one has an ink blot on his face. His mask has a big ink blot on it.
Watchmen.
Correct.
Two.
Yeah.
Two down.
I was starting to think, is he getting on about X-Men, Days of Future Past, 80s, and then, well, let's hear a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch Watchmen. This film is about a sad individual that still lives at his parents' house and has a very, very messed up life. He even gets to the point of his life where he has to staple sausages.
Ready, got fingered. That was my assumption. After you said sad person who lives with his parents, that was my assumption, but I wanted to let it play out a little bit.
This is a good run so far. Adam's been very kind here. There's not.
Yeah.
I'm going to speak too soon here, but that's really kind so far.
This is a film about an island where dinosaurs have been recreated and are running wild.
Okay. I just want you to keep going in case, because I think there's more than one. Jurassic Park.
Correct. I was trying to think of how I could word it to make sure you didn't say Jurassic World. It is Jurassic Park. Well done.
Yeah, because obviously you can't use the term park either.
Yeah, exactly.
This movie is based upon a police officer that is very badly beaten, so much so they have to build his body back into a metal structure and take on the baddies that have put him in that position.
Again, it's a film with sequels, so I'm going to assume Adam's been kind to us and that it's RoboCop.
Yes! I feel like, is these great, easy choices have we improved? I don't know.
How well have you been researching every film
ever? Every film ever.
The research has paid off.
But then I couldn't say robot.
When you said this is a movie, and then when you looked at me, I thought it meant like the title had the word film in, and you were like highlighting that it was you were saying movie instead of film. All right, here we go. Oh dear, right. This is an animated film where the main character is a little girl who is traveling with her parents, and their car breaks down, and she goes through an alleyway into a bathhouse that is run by a variety of ghosts.
Spirited Away.
Correct.
Adam, you're being really kind here.
Really kind.
Really, but I'll remember this.
He says that he'll bury us both next week. We'll have like Battleship Potemkin and stuff.
This movie is all about two very good friends that are given a large amount of money to make a film. They're very wacky.
Can I have a look at the thing, please? Yeah, you've used the word movie already. You said this movie is about...
Oh, come on.
Is movie in the title?
Yeah, it's Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie.
Oh, Mark, you screwed yourself.
You're being so kind.
You even then specifically went, film. I'll give him money to make a film.
Oh.
So you knew you couldn't say movie.
Oh, that's all right.
I just wanted to use shrimp. They go into a bathtub.
That's the first one we've got wrong. How many have we got right so far?
Six.
So six out of seven, so we've got three more left. This film is about time travel. It's about a teenage lad in the 80s who then starts to see visions of a bizarre man in a bunny costume.
Donnie Darko.
Correct.
I really wanted us to get all 10. I feel really bad now.
So that's seven, is it now?
Seven out of
nice.
Eight.
Nice.
Good start.
Is this a tricky one?
It is, just in the way of trying to sum it up.
Don't forget you can pass.
I'm going to pass.
What was
just
it?
Just because I want a bit of fun.
What was it?
They Live.
Oh, that would have been hard to describe, yeah.
I would have messed up and said something. So I can pick another.
Yeah.
Will I regret that? Will I regret that? It's a hard one to sum up that.
Yeah.
Wow. You've done me over.
You had your one pass.
Thing is, I don't think anyone knew what happened in this film, so I'm gonna I'm being serious.
Give it a go.
This is a movie that is all about alien invasion, and there's a lot of standing around and the buildings get attacked quite badly. The battle is between humans and aliens, and the spaceships are really kind of evil and sinister. But I wouldn't know how it ended because they ran out of money. And we only get a end battle, which is done via images because they actually did run out of money. So I don't know how the plot ends in this film.
I know exactly what it is, but I can't remember the name. I know what... Is it the one with the guy from Scrubs?
It is.
Yeah, yeah. I know what pass it is, but then, I can't, yeah, I'm going to pass because I don't remember the name.
Skyline.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. So you got seven, you got one left. One left.
That's done us badly because that is a film that no one knows how it ended.
Yeah.
Don't ever pick that as a rewatch, any of you. Please.
This is a film about a young lad who befriends an alien, and the young lad happens to be in a wheelchair.
Because I know what it is instantly, I want you to keep going just for the fun of you trying to sum up this.
The two buddies, the alien and the little wheelchair-bound fella, they have many adventures that involve Coca-Cola, Skittles and McDonald's.
I'm starting to think...
There's a point where we get to meet the alien's family, who are all identical to him, other than just slightly taller or shorter.
Yep.
And it's arguably the greatest moment... Come on, you know what it is.
Oh,
you know
it's Mac and Me.
Of course it's Mac and Me.
Are we done?
We've done. So what did we get?
Eight.
Yes!
That's not bad, is it? That is not bad.
I'm happy with that.
We've got the one left in the pot that we didn't pass on that would have been mine if I'd passed. So let's have a go at it just
have
for
a look.
Fun, shall we?
You two have got to be eight next week, and I am going to shaft you both. Yeah.
Well, I haven't got to because I'll have won either way.
Yeah.
Here we go. This is a film set in a theme park where there are robotic cowboys, one of which goes mental.
Westworld.
Correct.
Good work.
Good work. Yeah, that was a good list of films.
So stick around in 2 weeks when I'm going to shaft them both. It wouldn't be a Skip to the End podcast without the most important people in the world, our listeners, giving us some questions. So let's fire off with Alan Stokes. He says, are there any movies that make you very hungry or thirsty? They probably use product placement and give you a pizza or a certain item of food.
I don't think that's true, no. I mean, the only films that have done that for me are probably Mac and Me, Turtles 1.
The first Turtles, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think it's product placement.
Genuinely, when I was living in Birmingham, I remember this because it was... I live really near to fast food places, and I watched Super Size Me, and the whole point of that film is to say you shouldn't eat McDonald's all the time, and as soon as it ended I went straight to the Mackey's. It was 5 minutes from my flat, and had a Big Mac meal because that all it did was just make me hungry, and I was like, okay, as long as I don't eat this shit 3 meals a day for 30 days I'll be fine, but I can have a Mackey's now.
That's fair, yeah.
Did you... they've stopped doing Super Size, haven't they?
Like, well, you can still get large, which is effectively... yeah.
They never really did a Super Size in this country, though. No. They, it was all just like... large and extra large meals.
Like, after watching Turtles, I did want to... I think you did, actually. You ordered a...
I had a pizza.
Pizza, yeah. So it does work.
Did you use Pizza Hut?
Yeah. But other good pizza restaurants are available.
What I like about this is someone called Anna Wright has put, what's the worst movie you've ever seen for product placement? So I put them two together.
Well, Mac and Me.
It is Mac and Me. Has to be.
iRobot is pretty bad.
Oh, God, the close-up of his trainers and all that.
What are you doing, son? I'm just doing my... Converse, All Stars.
Which is bad, but it's not Coca-Cola brings them back to life bad.
Because it's a life-giving elixir.
Or imagine, like, you know, people always talking about a certain cider.
What cider would that be?
Strongbow Dark Fruits, of course. That's the only cider.
It is the only cider, as far as I'm concerned.
If there's going to be a cider you talk about, Strongbow Dark Fruit, because it's the most thirst-quenching cider.
Damn straight.
Big time. Lovely. At Freddy ICT, The last film you saw that you told all your friends they had to see it?
High Rise. That's the most recent film that I saw that I started evangelising about and saying, have you seen this yet? If not, go see it. Before that, it was Sicario.
Nice. Mine was because I was really late to the party, Ex Machina. I really was late, and everyone's like, you need to see it. They're like, yeah, we did a year ago, you dick. I'm like, okay, yeah, good point.
The Avengers, 1998 version.
My yeah. ass.
No, it was probably the last thing that a film I told people they had to see, it, and this is, I don't often say things like that, was Whiplash. Told people, this is the one film that I said to people, if you're going to see any Oscar film this year, this has to be the one to see it. That was last year now, but that's probably the last film I watched that I really raved about to everyone.
Yeah, I did the same.
Most of my friends don't really care that much for film, so I just, which is quite nice in a way, because they're not always asking my opinion on it, which is lovely. So I rarely kind of rave to them about things, but that one, I told them they had to watch it. It was that good.
Fair play.
So Tim Johnson said he really enjoyed the last episode, but he feels we're a bit unfair on 3D because he thinks it works on the right films. He said that there are some out there like Prometheus and stuff like that work really well.
Prometheus was
done well.
We kind of made that point anyway, didn't we?
What he's asked is, do you think there's actually films that would have worked well in 3D that weren't? That you wish you could have seen in 3D?
I guess it kind of depends what they mean. If it means they were filmed in legit 3D cameras, then potentially. But just the post-production 3D, I don't see the point. It's just an affectation. Something like Jaws. Imagine if Spielberg would have had access to top-of-the-range 3D cameras in 1970, whatever it was. That would have been great in 3D, I'm sure.
I often find that anything kind of animated or anything that's computer-generated tends to work a lot better in 3D. So I think things done on that side of things, I mean, look at things like Toy Story when they were done in 3D.
Yeah.
It was done post-production later on because they re-released it. But the original Toy Story, if they'd done that in 3D, could have been something absolutely special.
Do you know what? It's a real trick one. I've got to think of things that come out. I like sometimes that, like, I think they did the final Saw film where it was a bit too over the top, but it's difficult, isn't it? Mad Max was done really well. I'll give credit to that.
Which was post-production, I believe, wasn't it?
I think so.
I'm going to go with something like Saving Private Ryan. So you've seen all those explosions and stuff coming at
That'd
you.
That'd be horrendous.
Really...
I don't want to see them dying on the beaches in 3D.
Sorry, but I think it would work really well.
It's your choice, man.
Yeah.
I personally, that'd be horrendous.
Psycho.
It'd work well, though. God, I need to edit this.
I just want all the blood coming out of the screen.
But it would, work. It like it'd put you there. It would put you there.
I don't want to be. I want an element of distance between me and the battlefield. Thank you.
Okay, the abyss. Is that right? That'd be nice. Lots of depth.
I'm fully happy that I wasn't part of the D-Day landings. Yeah.
Ryan Abbott has said that when he had his first son, he really wanted to call him Ash after Evil Dead, but his missus overruled it, and they ended up calling him Sam. If you guys had children, would you like to have a movie themed name for your child?
Probably not, no.
Mac. Baby Mac.
See, I would. And I would use the name that my mother nearly gave me. When I was a kid, when I was born, my mum had two names to choose from, Ben and Harrison.
Oh, man.
So I could have been named Harrison. I could have been a young Han Solo. Instead, my mum named me Ben after the Michael Jackson song in which he's singing about a rat. So instead of naming me after Indiana Jones, my mother named me after a rat. Cheers, Mum.
But your mum might be that much of a fan. She knew that Harrison Ford's son was going to be called Ben in episode 7.
Maybe.
It makes up a few points.
Maybe she has clairvoyant powers, yeah.
No, I don't think I'd really want to go. A name's a name. You don't have to give it a name until it's 5.
Brilliant. Call it number 1 or X.
Until it can actually answer it. What's the point?
I actually worked with a guy, I can't mention him because he might listen, but he actually called his son Anakin, and it was cool for a few minutes, and then literally everyone was like, that's ridiculous, mate, and this kid's like 8 now, and he's walking around at school, Anakin.
Oh, I thought you meant like, he named him Anakin, and then episode 1 came out.
They've stolen the name!
He immediately regretted it.
Is that the kid's first name or middle name?
First name.
Is it really?
I know. It's one of those things you think, oh, that's pretty cool, mate. And then you're like, it's not actually, is it?
I know that like Jerry Seinfeld is the world's biggest Superman fan, and his kid, either his first name or middle name, is Kal-El. That's how big a Superman fan he is.
Oh, Robin Williams named his daughter Zelda.
Really?
After Princess Zelda.
This is an interesting one, because I know you're not a massive horror fan, Ben, but from Sarah Sutcliffe, the most scary film you've ever seen. Now, I'll answer it while you think. I saw a film called The Tale of Two Sisters that Rich, who came on the podcast at Christmas with a Star Wars episode, told me to watch. It's a World Cinema title. Mm. And I was like, yeah, I'll put it on. It really did freak me out in the way of, it's not so gory in horror, but the way it's done was chilling. And then he also told me to watch a film that was, I think Del Toro had some involvement in it, called The Orphanage.
Oh, Del Toro.
Yep, good old Del.
Our old mate Del, yep. Derek Del Toro.
And The Orphanage is one of the most harrowing films I've seen. And the surround sound, because I tried out my surround sound with it, is shit scary. So it isn't the obvious, oh, Saw or this or that. It terrified me, and it was done so well that I recommend everyone to check out those films, because they are shit scary.
The only film I remember scaring, I'm not really easily scared by films. That's why I don't watch horror films. They do nothing for me. The one I remember being scared by, because I was a kid when I saw it, was It.
Oh, my Lord.
Pennywise the Clown is frightening.
Remake of that coming.
Again, why bother? Because the one that exists, I mean, there's two. There's also a TV miniseries as well. It doesn't need to be a new film. The first one, I think is it Tim Curry who plays Pennywise? Yeah. Amazing.
Clowns are scary, whatever they do.
Clowns, they're just weird, man.
Did you walk past loads of like gutters and look down and to see if those eyes were there for a few weeks? Anything for you?
Woman in Black 2, Angel of Death.
Jorah the Explorer has said, what defines a good movie villain? Is it when you can understand where they're coming from, or because they're very evil?
The former, I would say. They need to have believable motivations.
Yeah, I think something like... what I find most intriguing about a villain is that grey area they have sometimes, where... A bit like, I guess, the Punisher, in a way, where you kind of understand his reasons, you understand his motives, and as much as you disagree with method... You can kind of see why he does what he does.
Yeah, well, it's like Zemo in the new Captain America film.
Yes.
He was a villain. He tries to destroy the Avengers, but that's because his family died as a direct result of what the Avengers had done in Sokovia. So I like that. I like there being a moral grey area.
Depth.
Yeah,
depth
exactly.
A bit of depth to a character.
And do you know what I'm absolutely sick of in villainy? When they have some sort of MacGuffin, some all-powerful thing, like take the Avengers rewatch we had, he could control the weather, or so-and-so has a nuclear bomb, or so-and-so has this magical device. When they have just a device that can destroy everything, boring. Absolutely boring.
One of the only times in which I've really seriously enjoyed a character with little to no motive is the Joker.
Yeah,
his only motive being complete chaos.
Chaos, yeah.
And that's what I love. I love not knowing much about their backstory and just kind of thinking, what was it that did this to you, man? Like, you're really messed up and you're really evil. Yeah. Why?
Well, actually, in the recent run of DC Rebirth that's come in, they're going to expand on the Joker's origin story.
Ooh.
And they're actually going to give a definitive origin. Yeah, basically, when he was 5, his parents brought him like his E.T. blow up inflatable thing.
Oh yeah, the most scariest film I've ever seen is E.T. I thought you were being serious then. I was getting all into it. Alan Davis, new to the podcast, loving it, says, any film in the world that everybody in the whole world loves but you hate, and you can't get your head round it that everyone loves
I've told you this before, it's The Lion King. What is that about? Absolute garbage.
I wouldn't say everyone loves it, but something like Titanic. Like, people seem to rave about that at the time, and I never got it.
Yeah. I don't understand why it's so successful. I don't think everyone loves it, but it was incredibly successful. Yeah. It's still at, like, number 3 in the all-time charts or whatever. Why? Rubbish.
I'm going to say it. I know it's recent, and we absolutely ripped it to pieces, but there are some people I've seen on forums that say it's good and made them laugh out loud. Grimsby. What is that about? And there are Americans that went crazy for it and said it's the best work he's ever done.
I heard two people at my work... I overheard them talking about how great and how hilarious it was, and I just sat there with my hands clenched with just silent rage.
Wow.
Honestly, I nearly had a stroke. I was so angry.
Chris Smolonski, but his actual Twitter handle is @ramblingwriter.
Mm-hmm.
What is the greatest terrible movie ever made?
Oh, The Room.
It's The Room.
What? That's not a terrible film. For me, that's an absolute masterpiece.
It is The Room. It's the masterpiece of terrible films.
Yeah.
Taking us back to when Ben was talking about the rewatch on this episode, I heard him make a comment about how actors would come in and do a performance and read, and then, you know, there might be 2 or 3 people going for this. Wiseau didn't do that for a lot of the parts.
There's a surprise.
No screen test. Just get him on.
Well,
they're right.
He knew the chemistry.
He knew it. So when you're saying did they work well together... He didn't do any of that.
And you're
mate.
Right. And the thing is about that, there are some directors who can do that. They don't screen test. They just know who the right actors are for the part. The thing about Wiser, he's so good and so in tune with all this stuff, he didn't even pick actors. He just found people who were hanging around street corners and went, you're in. That is how good that man is.
He's so good, he didn't even need chemistry with anyone.
Yeah.
He found the actor inside people that they didn't even know was there.
Exactly.
If they bought a leather coat off him.
Awesome pants. I'm going to be in the room too. But no, keep your question. Keep your questions coming. The best way to contact us is on Twitter or email. And the best way to go about finding those addresses is skiptotheend.co.uk. And we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
Hi, I'm John from Raging Speedhorn. You're listening to Skip to the End podcast. I'm going to be completely truthful here. My favourite film ever, and you're going to laugh, is The Lion King. My second favourite film...
It's Fat Death.
No. He chucks him off by his claws. Just yeah. Kills me faster. Why? Why? Fuck you, Scar. Anyway. My next film, if I'd say, like, say, for instance, my top five, is a French film that is called either High Tension or Switchblade Romance.
Right.
Amazing film. Like, the whole plot behind it, everything, the way it's done. It's one of those ones that keeps you guessing all the way to the end, and then the twist hits you, and you're like, fuck, I've got to watch it again. You know, it's just one of those films.
Write that one down. We need to write that one up. We'll look that one up.
Well, what other
ones? That's your top two. What else you got?
You can't beat the classics. You can't beat a bit of Blazing Saddles.
Of course.
And Spaceballs.
Yeah.
And Jaws, yeah, but you're forgetting about the complete classics. Like the Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
Can't beat the Blues Brothers.
What about John
film.
Carpenter films?
Yeah, I've watched a few, but yeah. I think my favourite director is definitely Guillermo del Toro. That guy does some crazy shit. Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Definitely another Magical. One in the top five. Gotta be. Amazing film.
Yeah. Absolutely awesome. And Pacific Rim 2 coming out soon enough.
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. I watched the first Michael Bay Turtles. I thought, yeah, it's amazing. And then the trailers I've seen for the second one, I've can't wait. Really want to watch it.
It's good fun.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fun.
Beer, pizza, you know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I can't wait.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Thank you to John Laughlin there from Raging Speedhorn, another one of the acts that we managed to meet and have a quick chat to at Download. We'll have a brief little chat for a couple of minutes about Download in the minute, but let's just wrap up this episode as we normally do. Good fun one today, wasn't it, lads?
I feel a bit sad it's over. You know, when you're just getting into it and loving it and just being like, yeah, and now it's like we have to call it a day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's been a good laugh.
It's sad.
It's been a good episode. I think we're always putting out good episodes now.
I know, I just feel really sad.
High standard.
Yeah. So, Adam, what film are we going to review next time?
We're going to be looking at the sequel to Now You See Me. So we're going to go for Now You See Me 2.
Which will be fun, because I like the first one. It's not an amazing film, but I enjoyed it.
It's all right. I thought the twist at the end was fairly terrible. So I'm kind of... but I'm now they're doing a sequel, I'm kind of looking forward to how that plays into this.
Yeah.
Have they not gone with, like, Now You See Me Again or something?
No, but I've heard that there's going to be a third one, which they'll probably call Now You Three Me.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty good, isn't it?
No.
Mark, what's the topic?
It's a good one. It is the top three sidekicks in film. And nice. I'm telling you now, there's millions to choose from. Absolutely millions.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those where it's just whittling it down from 100 to 3, isn't it?
From, mate, honestly, thousands to 3.
Mm-hmm.
Just a quick question. Out of Rocky and Bullwinkle, which one is a sidekick?
Mate, that's like an existential debate. We haven't got the time for that. And I've picked the rewatch. It's going to be Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, one of the few films
really
where Johnny Depp put in a good performance and wasn't just a dick in a costume.
That's uncalled
hands.
For. Willy he's Wonka. A wife-beating dick in a costume. No, he's not.
Allegedly.
No, he wouldn't do that.
Yowza.
No. Wonka. Johnny Wanker.
What year are we skipping back to, Adam?
1981. Not looking like a great year at the minute.
No, not so much.
But we'll see. We'll see what we all come back with.
Yeah. We're really selling this. Like, oh, we're going to be watching Now You See Me 2. You know, that one is all right, the first one.
But whatever you do, don't skip the next episode because I'm sure we're going to give something away. Well, we always do.
Yeah, it'll be a cracking prize.
Massive.
No doubt.
You wait.
Yeah. So if you don't want to listen to us talk, just tune in for the prize.
And of course, who could forget the final round of Lost the Plot?
Indeed, where it's myself and Adam teaming up.
I've said it already. I'm going to screw you hard, and I am. I'm going to go all out, and it's going to be an absolute massive beating.
Brilliant. Well, that's something for the listeners to look forward to.
I'll go and research. You know, Scandinavian 1950s auteur pieces.
Let's talk about Download.
Go on then, yeah. So Mark and I were lucky enough to attend Download this year. It's held at the Donington Racetrack in Leicestershire, and it's a phenomenal festival of heavy metal and hard rock.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd been, so I was really looking forward to it. And it did not let us down, did it, Mark?
It was incredible. It was the worst rain ever in the history of the festival.
Is that right?
To hit that amount of grass. And I'm telling you now...
Is that how they measure rainfall? It was the most rain to hit that grass.
They pick up the blades of grass. Now,
this is a music festival, so when you say grass, what are you talking about?
The grass on the ground.
I am not exaggerating. We got there on the Friday. I was like, this is amazing. Like, literally, we're looking around. It's sunny. It's great. Alien Ant Farm are on in a minute. What else could you ask for in life?
Playing their one song.
I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. I know a few people that went. They said it was terrible.
Really?
Yeah. A few people didn't enjoy it, that I know. But
that's crazy.
You can't cater to everyone, can you?
No.
That's crazy.
And I thought the weather was horrendous. But to me, we said this at the time, it just added to the atmosphere. Mm. It kind of felt like a camaraderie thing. We were all out there getting absolutely pissed on, but we're watching Black Sabbath while we do it, or we're watching Korn while we do it. And it was just this kind of brotherhood of people. I loved it. I thought it added to it.
Yeah. If you told me beforehand that I'd be standing there for an hour watching Korn getting the wettest you've ever been, I'd have gone, I'm not up for it. I didn't even remember that it rained at that point. I was so absorbed by the music, and I'm just going to say it now. A lot of people have said, well, what was the best band? Korn, for me, nailed it.
Yeah.
They absolutely unbelievable for an hour and 10 minutes, like hit after hit after hit, and it was just like the best experience.
Is it like Johnny Depp again?
they're so good live. They're so tight musically. You know, there are people who turn their nose up at Korn and they say, oh, they're new metal. Well, no, they invented new metal. A lot of shit bands came after them, but they were good in the first place. That's why a genre sprung up. And they're still brilliant. And they're just so tight musically. Every member of that band is so on point. Jonathan Davis's vocals live are flawless.
Perfection.
You know, we saw Sabbath and it was amazing to get to see Black Sabbath, one of my favourite bands, but I'd never seen them live, and this is supposedly their final tour. But truth be told, Ozzy's vocals suck these days. It was great to see him do things like Iron Man and, you know, all the greatest hits like War Pigs and so on, but he doesn't really have it anymore. But Korn, like, they were just so perfect, weren't they?
I think the reason that people have still got a gripe about Korn is that from Korn we got Puddle of Mud.
Yeah. And Limp Bizkit and Stained. Yeah.
It's understandable, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, they created a god-awful genre, but they can't be blamed for the shit that came after them.
And a band...
No, just like you can't blame Blade Runner for all the third-rate dystopian sci-fi films that came after it.
One of the bands that you like, Adam, were there. Heck.
Oh, I thought you meant Bowling for Soup.
Heck were there, and they put on a show that was insane.
Yeah.
Heck are awesome, man.
They were great. The lead singer at one point was climbing up the rigging of the stage, so they cut his mic, and this stage manager came out and basically started wagging a finger at him, saying, you need to get him down, or else I won't turn your mics back on.
Oh, Heck is such a good show. If you guys get the chance to go and see Heck, see Heck.
Go and see them.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it was fantastic. We got to see some NXT wrestling.
Got to see the debut of Bobby Roode. First time he's wrestled for NXT, which is very cool. Raging Speedhorn, we had John in the intro. How great were they? Because I know, Mark, I've been going on about Raging Speedhorn for years to you, and you'd never seen them live, had you?
Ever. And I was kind of like, all right, Ben, like you're going off about them. But I'm not being horrible. I was kind of like, no, I'm sure they're all right. But the way you were talking, I was like, they're not going to be that good. Like I did with Refused.
Yeah.
And I went in, and I was like, they're up there in the top bands of the whole weekend. It was a small tent. It was rammed. It was the same time as Rammstein, which I didn't really like. And they just blew my head off. And every single song, I was like, that was phenomenal.
Yeah,
great guys.
Like, the thing that pleased me about it is a couple of days afterwards, you text me and said, what's Raging Speedhorn's best album?
Yeah.
That's a win to me. That means I've sold the band to someone else. It was fantastic seeing all of those guys.
And Deftones. Well, I've just got to say it now. We got to meet the Deftones.
We did. We got to snap a photo with Chino from Deftones. An idol of ours, isn't he, Mark?
I've seen the photo. He looks miserable.
He does look miserable. We did kind of grab him and go, hey, Chino, here's a camera. Take a picture. Hey! And we ran off. We scarpered.
But thanks to Download for sorting us out with some backstage passes and press passes, and WWE for giving us a bar.
Yes, we got to go into the little VIP area on the WWE day. We were there at 10 a.m. and El Vino did flow.
I'm not joking. I was like on Facebook on Saturday night when I was seeing some of these photos that crop up from you guys. I was sitting there at my best mate's wedding. Oh. He'd married his wife. Congratulations, Callan.
Yep.
Love you both. But I was jealous.
Yeah. Callum, I love the wedding, but I'm just going to go now.
Yeah, I was just sitting there like, oh, especially when you said you saw Bobby Roode's debut. NXT, I was like, oh, you had to get married today, didn't you?
But yeah, a wicked weekend. Thanks to them for sorting us out.
So what was the chap's name who sorted us out?
Curtis.
Yeah, so thank you to Curtis.
And we're going to now turn into a music podcast. And if you didn't like Dan, we've just talked to you to death for 5 minutes, but we loved it and we just thought we'd share it with you.
Yes. So thank you to everyone involved. It was a great old time and let's do it again next year, shall we?
So tune in on episode 49 next week for Glastonbury. Anything else to say, boys?
Nah, let's bring it to an end, shall we? See you in 2 weeks. Sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without wanting love bears heavy on my mind. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely